The Fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. Have you got game? Got game on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet590.ca.
This is Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network, a show by gamers for gamers. Coming up this week, a new version of Tony Hawk is ollieing over consoles and kickflipping over to mobile gaming. We're going down to South Park to have ourselves a time to talk about the Stick of Truth. Brian gets set to turn left with his review of NASCAR 14, and Christine goes under cover of darkness to review the latest installment of Thief.
Have you got game? Lowdown.
This is Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome to another week where we talk about video games here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Omen Qureshi, back in the host chair this week. I was away last week covering some of the, I wasn't actually at the Olympics, but I was going around to establishments around the city talking to fans as we watched games.
Well, technically we were all away last week because there wasn't actually an episode of Got Game on
the air. That is true.
Because of the Olympics.
See, yes. What happens when I'm away? It's just not good enough to put on the air. That's what happens.
It was actually a pretty good show. I was slightly disappointed that it did not make it to air until we had Soshi Crying Bear.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
The crying bear at the closing games made my entire weekend.
That thing was terrifying, and the fact that it is your Twitter picture freaks me out right now. I'm like, I don't know what to make of that. Brian is a crying mechanical bear on
with
Twitter now.
With a single tear.
That's because Brian is a crying mechanical bear.
That was so terrifying.
I will agree with you. It really was terrifying, but I don't know. There's something about the fact that it cried one single tear as it blew out the Olympic flames. It warmed my heart.
In Russia, mechanical bear cries for you. People don't know who you are yet. You're Christine Chubb.
I am.
You're Brian Calhoun.
I hope they know who we are. Yeah, we've been doing this for five years.
I mean,
years.
For people who are turning in for the first time, almost six, coming up on six, almost.
Yeah, a couple months.
In a couple of months, we'll be hitting our six-year mark. That's Brian Calhoun. He filled in for me in the host chair last week. Thanks to Brendan Fryer from CNG Magazine for filling in once again. Does a great job when he does it.
That episode, though, did make it online, so iTunes, tune in on the Android, our Got Game blog. Yeah. Those are the normal locations.
Sportsnet590.ca.
Yep, those are where you can find that particular episode. It was pretty good. We talked about a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. The Titanfall beta.
Yep.
We reviewed a couple of games, including The Last of Us DLC, which I feel is an amazing piece of DLC. Probably
wicked.
Some of the best stuff that they have put out.
Yep.
So,
and as not good just as the game itself.
Yeah, and not just because of that one big thing that everyone's talking about.
Yeah.
There are a lot of tiny set pieces in that game, which are just mind-blowing.
Excellent.
So you can find that episode. You can find every episode we've ever done, every blog post we've ever done at sportsnet590.ca, iTunes, and the TuneIn app. You can follow us on Twitter at GotGame590. Always send an email, sportsnet590. No, GotGame at sportsnet590.ca. Man, 1 week away from this show, and I just, everything just leaves my brain. This is why I should never take any weeks off. It's just awful.
That's true.
I blank. Christine, you won't be here next week, so we're going to see how much you remember the week after.
That's true.
Yeah, we'll have to find out.
GotGame will be on the air, though.
GotGame, yes, we will. Unless
it's only the Olympic crying bear that cancels GotGame.
Yeah, we bow to the will of the Olympic crying bear. One thing you guys did talk about a couple weeks ago, mm-hmm. I was here for that, Brett Laurie on the cover of MLB The Show 2014, the Canadian edition. Mm-hmm. Now we know what cover is going to be there because they were voting between a couple. Mm-hmm. You can find a picture of that at the Got Game blog at sportsnet590.ca. Christine, I understand that this is your doing.
Yeah, I voted. That was the one that I voted for, so it's 100% my doing. I have just that kind of power. to me, that was the natural cover. I think it was the better of the two. It looked like he was, you know, cranking something good out there. I'm just so disappointed that there wasn't some kind of, like, in the back in one of those, like, hallucinogenic kind of images in the top corner, like those terrible 80s pictures of Adam Lind's beard. Just have it hovering somewhere in
like
the background.
Like a thought bubble?
Yeah.
Like Laurie is
as
thinking about Adam
ball,
Lind's beard?
He's thinking, Adam Lind's beard is a good-looking beard.
If you haven't seen Adam Lind's beard, I know spring training just started.
And it's been the talk of spring training.
Because
yeah,
it's
beard.
Glorious. It is glorious. I know, look, we all know the Red Sox had their beards last year when they went to win the World Series. Mm-hmm. But I think the Lind beard trumps all those Red Sox beards. And they had some good ones on the Red Sox.
It's amazing, too, because, I mean, and it's the red beard. That's
yeah,
the thing, too.
Exactly.
Because he's a redhead. It's that beautiful red beard.
And it's glorious.
Those people that you talked about at the very beginning of the show who have never listened to Got Game before, who are just tuning in,
yeah,
would have no idea this is actually a show about video games.
Well, It is some of the time.
It is.
The but sometimes it, we deviate.
The rest of the time, it's about Amlyn's beard.
Yeah,
it's
that's right.
It's a good talking point.
Got facial hair.
Got beard. You're going to call it got beard from now on.
Nice.
But you can see the picture of that one at the Got Game blog at sportsnet590.ca.
The cover, not the beard.
Google
not the
beard. Adam Lynn's beard, well, though. Just look at it.
Yeah, I mean,
if you want the beard on it so badly, you can write this week's Got Game.
That's right. Send us a tweet at GotGame590 or email us gotgame@sportsnet590.ca. If you want a picture of the beard up there, we will put the picture of the beard up there, but only by request. Or at the very least, we will Google image a search and then tweet it out to you so you can go look it up yourself.
Moment will be doing that.
Yes, I will happily do it. You are listening to Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network, either in Ottawa on 1310 News, here in Toronto on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, or online at sportsnet590.ca. One thing you guys did talk about last week while I was away is the coming of a new Tony Hawk game.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Surprise twist in that story.
Yeah.
Yes, boom twist. It's not coming out on the Wii U or the Xbox 360 or the Xbox One or the PlayStation 3 or the PlayStation 4. It's coming out on a mobile system.
Huh. It's shocking. I did not see that coming at all, especially because, you know, the last game was the reboot, as we talked about last week. You know, it was primed to have a new one on the new systems, and then to be like, nope, we're going on your phone.
Which is weird, because the reason this got leaked is because Tony Hawk originally said something about being in a motion capture suit.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're mocapping for Android and iPhone games?
That's a lot of work.
That's a lot of money being spent for an iPhone game.
Yeah,
for an iOS game.
This is being published by Activision, so right. You have to assume that somewhere along the line someone did the numbers, but... Mm-hmm. I mean, I got to be honest. Did anyone really explain the financials to Tony Hawk about iPhone games and Android games? Angry Birds, Flappy Birds, these are the exception. Words with Friends is not the rule.
No.
Those are the few games that actually make a decent amount of money. The rest of them, well, you're kind of breaking even. And you're lucky if you're breaking even in some cases.
Well, it makes me wonder, too, because he's already had a game on the mobile platform. Was it so successful that he was like, all right, let's do that again. That made us a lot of money.
Maybe. I mean, the thing about the mobile games is that there is a massive, massive install base that you have. I mean, pretty much everyone these days, with the very few exceptions, has a smartphone in their hands. Whether they game on it or not is a different story.
Yeah, but it's hard to reach those people. There's barely any marketing. Now, I remember I talked to someone who used to do marketing for PopCap, who used to be part of their PR team. And then when they started talking about gun warfare, no one at PopCap really knew how to approach that because they never did a Plants vs. Zombies gun warfare console game.
Yeah.
Like they just finished putting it out. They did not know how to approach that because... they weren't used to these big advertising campaigns. They were not used to talking to the press in such numbers. It was brand new for them.
Yeah,
which you will be reviewing later in the show.
Yes,
the latest
I will
edition.
Be talking about that later in the show.
Sure. So stay tuned for that. But yeah, I mean, even for, you know, mobile games, it's not only that the manufacturers are not used to doing it, it's tough to get people in our business to take notice and be willing to commit time for a mobile game.
They are quality products, but...
they're not as flashy.
Well, it's also not that. We have to... take a look at what is out there in the environment and figure out where our resources can best be used. And let's face it, this week alone, we're taking on Thief. Yep. Christine has that. NASCAR 14 and Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare, all of which are pretty decent expenditures. The cheapest would be the zombie game, Plants vs. Zombie, at $40. The other two are full price titles.
Mm.
That's kind of a bigger investment for our listeners than a $1 iPhone game. So that's kind of where we put our efforts, because if you lose $1, it's unfortunate, but it's a lot better than losing $64 on a product not worth the money.
Yeah, and there's times where the console market itself for gaming, they're saturated, where we hardly have enough time to get over and play all of those, let alone how many different mobile games there are out there. And I mean, granted, putting Tony Hawk's name on it obviously gives us more of a reason to play it because it is a Tony Hawk game. But, I mean, if you've got something coming out like, you know, South Park's coming out next week, we've got all kinds of other big games coming out, and if Tony Hawk is there, he's kind of going to have to go on the shelf because, you know, it's Tony Hawk, but it's not Watch Dogs. It's not another Batman game. It's not, you know...
Just quickly, you brought it up. We are going to talk about South Park, The Stick of Truth next segment when our good friend J.I. Acevedo joins us from Ubisoft, and then we're going to review it next week. We already have our copies in hand, but we can't talk about it until next week.
I don't know what you're talking about. I have nothing of the sort.
So we shan't say anything. But it's coming out on the mobile system. I think this is... we've talked about it many times in this show. That's sort of the way it seems to be moving towards It's an easier market to get into.
It's a huge install base, and I wouldn't say it's easier to develop for, but it's cheaper. You're dealing with a much smaller budget, and if you make that surprise hit, that Angry Birds, that Flappy Birds, Words with Friends, 3 is the most recent really big Android iOS game. If you actually make one of those, the payoffs can be extremely good, but as I said, those are the exception. They're not the rule. They're not the 10,000 other games on the Android platform that no one's ever heard of before.
Yeah. That's true. But similarly, games like Halo and Call of Duty are also the exception to the rule. There are also hundreds of games that come out on consoles every year that fall into the abyss.
I would say hundreds, but there
I would say there's hundreds of games that come out on consoles every year that just kind of drift off into the abyss, and there's only a handful that actually get up to that massive status.
I don't know. I'd have to actually go for the math, but it seems like saying hundreds of games come out on console every year seems a little inflated, but I mean, now we're just arguing math when we could be talking about the Wii servers coming down.
Well, there is no question that I am in this business because I don't know how to do math. So that's why I'm here. If I knew how to do math, I'd be a doctor or something. I don't know if they need to do math. But anyway, you're correct, Calhoun. The Nintendo has announced that the Wii servers for the Wii and the DS are both being taken down as of May the 20th. So if you want to get in one final game of Super Smash Bros. Brawl or Mario Kart or something like that, do so now because you won't be able to for much longer. Well, you'll be able to on your system, but you won't be able to play online with some friends because they're taking that down. Wii U still up, 3DS, I believe, still up and running, just original Wii 3DS. And DS will be taken down. I'll be honest with you. I still have my Wii, although it's unplugged and sitting in a corner somewhere. But I played online very rarely with my Wii. Like, very rarely.
It's extremely rare for me to play online with Nintendo products at all, to be honest.
Yeah,
the only thing I ever played on my Wii was Mario Kart. And even then, I mean, the constant complaints were how frustrating it was to ever get a game and once you were in the game.
Yeah.
I mean, the servers weren't that great. And I assume they're changing this over. They're taking what they've used there to bring into the Wii U, to expand the Miiverse and do all that kind of stuff. All that kind of money that went there is going to go to the new online product. I guess, you know, I can see the point of it, but, and I don't really know how many people would still play on their Wii in that kind of way. Because
how many people have their Wiis plugged in right now?
Nobody in this room.
Exactly. That's the thing, right? Is that not many people have their Wiis plugged in, and even if they do, they don't turn them on. And even if they do, how often do you turn them on?
Yeah.
Now, we are probably somewhat of an exception to a rule because of the business we're in. You two have new consoles. I have a Wii U now. So we're sort of ahead of the curve.
A new console, but sure, whatever.
Newer,
but it's more than a year old now, or sort of almost a year old. But for people like my nieces and nephew, they still have their Wii. They still turn it on from time to time. But I don't think they ever played online either, though.
I think that's the thing. I mean, Nintendo had such a huge library for the Wii, and the majority of it did not go online. So, I mean, if you still have your Wii, you can still play as freely as you want. You want to play your Mario games, you want to play Zelda, you want to play really anything, you can still play you can still play Mario Kart without being online, too.
So. And I always found that where the Wii excelled was
in the living room.
Yeah, in a party game format.
You know, and that was what it was built for.
Yeah, that's when I played it. Mostly when my cousins came over and we play Mario Kart together, we play Wii Sports together, we play
Rock Band,
Smash Brothers. I honestly can't, I'm thinking, I don't remember. I think with my 3DS, I have played online a few times. I've played the Mario Kart 7 online a few times against people, but that's like the extent of what I've done.
Yeah.
If they were still putting out sound packs for Rock Band and stuff like that on the Wii, maybe then you get upset, but when was the last time anyone even talked about Rock Band?
This is my first time this year.
No.
So I can tell you that much.
I did play Lego Rock Band recently, and one of my friends on the Xbox sent me a message just to mock me. He's like, why are you still playing Rock Band? I'm like, because I just had one of those nights where I'm like, I'm going to play some Rock Band.
It was Lego Rock Band?
It was Lego
Rock Band. We're in the Lego Renaissance right now.
Seriously.
So come on. I mean, if ever there was an appropriate time to play it, it's now. Anyway, we have a lot more to come on this week's show, including reviews of Plants vs. Zombies, Thief, NASCAR, and we're going to talk about South Park, The Stick of Truth, all coming up on Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The fan club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Have you got game in the game?
Wow.
This is Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Omen Qureshi. Christine Chubb and Brian Calhoun are around the table. You can follow us on Twitter at GotGame590. Find our blog at sportsnet590.ca. Email us GotGame at sportsnet590.ca. A game that we have been looking so forward to since E3 of 2011, I want to say, when Matt Stone and Trey Parker came out and introduced it. South Park, The Stick of Truth. It was delayed once. Started by THQ. They went away. Ubisoft bought it up. It's finally coming out on Tuesday.
They bought up the publishing rights.
Right.
That's what they bought.
It's finally coming out on Tuesday. We actually have our copies in hand, but we can't talk about it. So we'll review it next week. But to find out what this game is all about, we're going to bring in Jay Acevedo, our good friend from Ubisoft. Speaking of the truth, let's talk about the Stick of Truth.
Wow.
That was a good segue.
Hey, how's that for transition?
Somebody just got out of the Brian Calhoun School of Segways.
There you go. It's like I'm two-wheeling with these segues.
That's too hot for me.
Now, I know that you, like I, like all of us from the table, are a certain degree of South Park fans. There's been a few South Park games over the history of video gaming. This one is a little different. Can you just walk us through maybe a little bit about what this one is about?
It was directed, created, written, voiced by Matt and Trey at South Park Studios, obviously the creators of the show. And it's a role-playing game. Turn-based role-playing game where you playing as the new kid in town. So you're not playing one of the four main characters, but one that is trying to fit into the story. And from the videos that you guys already seen, and obviously I really don't want to spoil it because it's kind of the perfect game not to say much out of it because the element of surprise is what makes South Park great. But basically, technically what you are is you're playing this new kid coming in town to South Park, and then obviously, you know, your parents want you to have fun and meet new friends, and when you arrive, you are directly thrown into this imaginary world where the kids are playing as humans versus elves, trying to gain control of the sacred stick of truth.
Yeah, sometimes when I would imagine when parents think, oh, you know, go out and meet new friends, they're not thinking Eric Cartman is really what they're thinking.
I know. I mean, luckily, he's not the first friend that you find. It's Butters. So, you know, that kind of, like, oh, you know, it's Butters. And then, yes, the second character technically that you encounter is Cartman. He is the Grand Wizard of the Kingdom of Koopa Keats. So you kind of have to meet him right away. And he's the one guiding you through, you know, the first minutes of the game, showing you how to move and how to use your powers, choose a class, which is important. You have to listen to the Grand Wizard.
I just love the idea of Cartman as a grand wizard.
It's pretty awesome.
It's funny when it's often, most of the time, as we know, Cartman is probably auto-proclaimed grand wizard. So that's even funnier.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. And now we know in South Park there is obviously the four principal characters. You play as the new kid. But there are a lot of side characters in the show. Are we going to see those characters pop up throughout the game? I know you don't want to give away too much, but what can you tell us about other characters aside from the main four that will show up in the game?
Well, oh my God, now I have to think because I really don't want to spoil the surprises, but there's a lot of already conversations since E3 where we've shown some of the characters. You know, Randy Marsh is definitely, you know, a fan favorite of the show, so, you know, he'll be in the game. You know, obviously, you know, you're meeting with the four kids from South Park, so obviously they're friends. So I already mentioned Butters, you know, Tolkien will be there, obviously, you know, Mrs. Garrison. Mrs. Garrison, you know, whoever. But, you know, I think the cool thing about this game is that because it was made under strict direction of the creators of the show, is that there's a lot of nods that are going to be done through your campaign, but also, you know, the show has been around for, what, 17 years now, 18 years now? So, obviously, there's a lot of characters, a lot of recurring. Sometimes it's just one weird character that you've seen once, you know, like the taco guy. you know, will you see him in the game? I don't know, maybe, possibly, depends on how they were feeling that day. But the cool thing about this game is that there's a pretty high chance that your favorite character, whether it's the kids or not, that there will be in the game. And I think that's what makes the players really excited to play the game. You know, I have an adventure, I'm running around, but will I meet my favorite character? Is Mr. Slave there? You know, like it's one of those things that makes the game really appealing on top of obviously having a rich universe.
I feel like this game is different than most South Park games because I remember they had the one for the N64 where you go around and you're snowball fighting. But this game seems to be like the one that is most like the TV show. From what you've played, what you've heard, what you've seen, is that accurate?
Well, I mean, the goal number one for the dev team, and mostly from Matt and Trey, is that they want to give the impression that when somebody's playing the game, if somebody walks in the room, they feel like, oh, you're watching the show? Oh, wait, no, that's not the show. That's a video game. So that was the first goal that Matt and Trey wanted to achieve from day one. And to see it happening, I mean, when you're playing the game and you're walking around, if I walk into a room, I wouldn't necessarily, I mean, I would probably know because I know the game, but, you know, if a friend or a relative can come and say, what, are you watching TV? No, you're actually playing, wait, are you playing the TV show? So it already raises that kind of one-to-one pairing of authenticity, right? Mm-hmm. So that's exactly what you're getting. So aside from, obviously, the gaming moments, practically, you wouldn't see the difference between actual gameplay and some of the cinematics that will be in the game. So to me, I've never seen that in a South Park game, and for the dev team at Obsidian and South Park Studios to actually make that a mandate, I was saying that the mandate has been delivered.
And obviously, one of the big feels of South Park is kind of the shock and the crude humor and the silliness. And from the little bit that I've seen, especially at E3 this year, it's definitely there.
It's definitely there, and I don't know how much I can add to this. It's definitely there. So hide your kids, you know, and hide the prude members of your family, and, you know, put headphones if you have, but you're going to get a kick out of this game.
Well, let's just say the game is rated M for mature, so, yeah. So let's just put that out there, I think, which comes as a surprise to nobody. The game is South Park, The Stick of Truth, comes out on Tuesday. We're all excited about it. I know lots of people are excited about it. We have it. We'll have a review next week on Got Game. Jay, thanks very much, buddy. We appreciate it.
Always a fan of the show, guys. Thank you for having me.
So that was Jay Acevedo, our good friend from Ubisoft, talking about South Park, The Stick of Truth. We all have the game in our hands, and you'll have the review with us next week here on Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
I don't mean to sound like a jerk, but mine is actually sitting on the counter beside me.
That is true. And so is the Carmen. The Carmen's sitting right here. But we're going to review something else now, Brian. Now, it's a subject that you are quasi-familiar with.
Oh, I've been waiting for this for years, probably since 2010.
Why that long? Is this the first one since then?
No, there have been two other games since then.
Yeah, I feel like you review this every year.
But let's get into this and I'll explain why.
We are talking about Brian's passion, his love, his joy, his everything in this universe. NASCAR, the game, yep. 14, or NASCAR 14. What's it called?
This will be NASCAR 14.
NASCAR 14.
They've changed the naming conventions every couple of years. It seems like they're lining themselves up for an iterative name. So next year could be NASCAR 15.
Daytona 500.
Yep.
Last week, I guess when the show comes on, it'll be last week, yeah.
Yep.
Dale Jr. Wins.
Second only Daytona 500 win.
Yeah. Huge.
Yep.
Tweets out a picture in front of the statue of his dad, which, you know, brought a tear to my eye. I don't know if you saw that.
The world's greatest selfie, as it's being called.
Yes. It was awesome. Emotionally, I don't know if this game holds up on that level, but how is the game itself?
I do not get that emotional with NASCAR 14, but I am emotional in a sense because I'm happy because EA Sports really had something going when they stopped making the NASCAR games. Mm-hmm. The last one they made was NASCAR 09 that came out in 2010, and then that's when the license got moved over. We did not see a new NASCAR game until 2012. Since then, this British developer, Eutechnics, has been making them. Activision published the first two. Deep Silver published this game. This is NASCAR 14. And it's not a game changer, if you will. But if you remember when NASCAR first came out of Eutechnics, when that very first NASCAR game that they made came out, it was buggy. You were starting races on your hood. You'd have no idea why. It was really unplayable. Mm-hmm. NASCAR Inside Line, the game before this one, a little better. Not perfect. I gave it a 5 out of 10 because it still had a bunch of problems. So it was kind of a stepping stone on the way to NASCAR 14, which, as I said, not a game changer, but they have polished the heck out of it. They have finally gotten to that point where they are making a adequate NASCAR game, and that's why I'm happy. There's nothing really amazing about this game other than the fact that it works. So I'm extremely happy about NASCAR 14 and the fact that I can play it and have a reliable experience. There are a few issues. I mean, the AI drivers are, well, I have not seen aggression out of a NASCAR driver to this level since, well, do you remember in Phoenix last year where Jeff Gordon got into a bit of a tussle?
I don't remember, but I believe it, though.
Well, if you do not remember that story, then let me just say that they are very aggressive. But that was a heck of a story. You should go Google what happened to
NASCAR drivers are pretty aggressive on the whole. In terms of like motorsport, they're probably the most aggressive.
Yeah, and drivers in this game are a little bit more aggressive than NASCAR is on a whole. You also have a saying that you love, that you enjoy Was it realistic but not
realistic? Realism versus realistic.
Yes. Yeah. This game might be a little bit too realistic for my taste, in the sense that in the career mode, you have to start off with a very terrible car.
Mm.
Most of your parts are refurbished. You really have to earn points and make money to get yourself better pieces for your car and have a better car towards the end of the season. And I don't know. There's just something about that grind where I just want to take the game race by race. Mm-hmm. The career is there so that I can go through all the tracks in a row and have a variety, and that's kind of cool. I don't really care so much about having to work my way up through sort of the... I want to be the established guy already.
Yeah.
So having to work my way up through the ranks with subpar equipment when all these other guys are driving much better stuff, it holds no interest to me.
Sorry, I just want to ask you, when you mentioned tracks, are all the...
Oh, everything's
tracks
in it. Yeah.
It's all there.
Not all the paint schemes and drivers are in the correct places because stuff got moved around. We did play our interview with Ed Martin from Utechnics
a couple weeks ago
at this point. And he said that, hey, listen, there's some stuff in NASCAR that got changed in the last minute. Drivers, paint schemes, and in fact, as it turned out, rules, qualifying rules and rules for the chase. All that stuff, it will eventually be in the game. It's not there yet because they're waiting for everything to sort of pan out, for it all to settle down.
And also, they'll put out a patch for it.
Yeah, they will put out a patch for it eventually. Before the end of the season, within the next couple of months, they're just waiting for everything to sort of...
settle down.
Exactly. There are a few people online, and I'm not totally sure whether or not it was because I was playing on the PlayStation 3 for the first time. Mm. I'd always played these NASCAR games from Utechnics on the Xbox before, and there seemed to be a fewer player count.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, is this the PlayStation 3? But then there's also the addition this year of little leagues. You can create your own leagues inside the game, which is something people were doing before outside of the game, but now all the tools are inside the game to do that. So I was just wondering, well, maybe everyone who's playing online, maybe they're just playing in a league, but there's no way for me to test that.
Yeah.
So you should just be aware of that going in, that you might run into the same few people over and over and over again because all the people who are playing the game are in these leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, well, to play on the PlayStation 3, which has a terrible controller. I really do hate going back to that controller. Now that I've had the experience of the PlayStation 4 and even the Xbox One controller and the Xbox 360 controller, all are so much better than the PlayStation 3 controller.
Mm.
So as soon as I can, I'm going to go buy this game on the Xbox 360 so that I can play it on a controller that I feel gives me some level of control.
Mm-hmm.
Right on.
So that would be what I suggest you do. I'm going to give NASCAR 14 7 out of 10. As I said, nothing drastically different about this, but they have fixed all the issues that have plagued the series.
That's pretty good.
Since Utechnics took it over. So nice. I am very happy with NASCAR 14. It's going to be a game that I'll be playing a lot more than, you know, the Inside the Line version that came out previously and the 2012 before that.
You've given it a better score each and every year you've reviewed it, so clearly they're starting to get better at it.
They're definitely fixing these major issues that should never have been in the game, but it's the whole Madden development cycle.
Yeah.
Why is Madden so good? Because they've been working on it for 25 years.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So that's one review down. We have two to go, including Thief and Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare. Those are coming up next on Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, the Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca. We've got game. Do you? Gameplay.
You're listening to Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. This is our third and final segment of the week. I am Momin Qureshi, Christine Chubb, Brian Calhoun around the table. Last segment, we heard from Jay Acevedo from Ubisoft talking about South Park, the Stick of Truth. This segment, we're going to do some reviews. You can always follow us on Twitter at GotGame590. If you missed the show, go to sportsnet590.ca. You can find our blog and podcasts up there or on iTunes or on the TuneIn app on the Android network. You can email us, gotgame@sportsnetradio.ca. Christine.
Yes.
Getting back to where we were. Thief, a pretty anticipated game. Lots of people looking forward to this. What can you tell us?
Well, this is, I believe it's the fourth game in the Thief franchise installment, and it is the first time I've ever played a Thief game, so I feel I have to say that out there. I went in not really knowing what this game was going to be about, and...
It stole your heart?
Stop that. Stop it right now.
Come on.
Enough of your shenanigans.
I got a nod from Brian. I got a nod. You can't see it, but Brian was nodding there. Yeah.
That was a bit of a crime, but I'll give it to you.
Yeah.
It was the clenched fist and the nod. Moment.
All right, carry on.
Okay, so You know what? This is one of the bigger games that I was kind of excited for the new console, because I mean, as an RPG fan, I was excited to see really what these kind of exploring kind of games would look like. And let me tell you, this game looks pretty. Like, it is, it's, other than being one of the darkest, like literally the darkest game I have ever played.
I was about to say, how can you judge it by looks when all you're looking at are shadows?
Well, it's so funny because I've said this before. My living room has to be the brightest living room. Even in nighttime, my living room is super bright. And in order to see, because, you know, they have the game setting in the front at the very beginning where it's like, you know, scroll over so you can see the logo. I had to put my TV on sports setting, which is the highest setting you can get visually. And then I had to go to the brightness and crank the brightness up to 75 so I could even see the logo on it. This is how dark this game is. Like, it was crazy. I understand you're a thief, you're in the cover of darkness, but I was like,
you spend all your time going from shadow to shadow in this game.
But it was hard to even see anything at the beginning, because first I started playing it and I was like, okay, I know it's bright in here, but how do I see anything? So then that's when I just started messing with the settings. I was like, okay, this, and it's funny because I was actually, I got stuck on a part of it, and I ended up looking online for a little bit of a hint, because I was like, okay, I just don't get it. And it was, once again, because my screen was too dark, I couldn't see that there was something on the other side. But somebody had commented on the little video I saw saying, why is this game so dark? Because it's not just me, it's everybody.
I guess this is one of those ones, you know, when you first start a game and it says, scroll the bar until you can barely see the logo. That's one of those ones where you better take that part pretty seriously.
Yeah, like that. I didn't do it in the beginning. So then I had to go in, because the game comes in chapters. So by the end of chapter one, I'm like, all right, I need to change these settings. This is ridiculous. But once I could see the game itself, it was beautiful. It looks like, my guess is that you're in England. You're just known as the city. That's where it is. You're just a thief in the city. But it has this great kind of Victorian, dirty English kind of setting. And you play a thief named Garrett, who you've, I believe, played throughout the series. And I don't want to give too much away because the story is pretty intricate. One of your fellow thieves stumbles upon what appears to be a ritual and mysteriously vanishes / dies, and you wake up what is an inordinate time later. You don't know what's happened, and you kind of have to go through, figure out what's happened, who this community was, what's going on, what's happened to you in this amount of time. And it gets a little weird. Like, I have to say, the plot of this went in certain ways that I was not expecting it to go. And it, at times I was like, really, it was had like creepiness. Like, I'm sitting there, I've got the blanket over me, I'm like, I'm walking around. There's one part where you walk through an insane asylum, which is, you know, always going to be kind of freaky. And like, things are jumping out. And I was like, oh my God, this is not how I thought this game was going to be. But it was exciting. I definitely enjoyed it. Having never played this game before, I had no frame of reference. Apparently, there's been an asylum in previous games.
Are we talking, in terms of weird, are we talking like the Culture Club, or are we talking like the Winter Tale?
The
Winter's Tale, I guess it is.
We're talking kind of like almost Silent Hill-y kind of creepy. That's with it. Not like as... Yeah, not extreme.
Fun, not fun and loving like the Culture Club,
no.
and not just indecipherable like the Winter's Tale.
No, it goes with the storyline in that it makes sense, but it's just creepy and it's spooky. But it's kind of like it's a mind kind of messing game as opposed to like Crazy Boy George in a Weird World. But there were some definite faults with this game, and a lot of it came with the gameplay itself. I found that there was really an inconsistency with some of the controls, and there was restricted movements with where you could go. Like, it appears to be an open world, but it really isn't. You're really limited at times to where you can go. You get all kinds of different little tools that you can use. Like, there's a rope dart, and there's a few other things. But everything, again, comes with restriction, and I was hoping that it would be a little more open and free-form, where you could kind of, in an Assassin's Creed kind of way, where you can kind of go wherever you want and scale everything. Well, you can't do that here. It's kind of restricted. But there is a weird inconsistency, especially when it comes to jumping across things, because there are some times where you can freely jump from one place to another, and then there were times where I was scaling across one of the buildings, and I was like, okay, I'm going to jump to that ledge, and I would fall to my death. And I was like, I just jumped that over there. Like, how come I can't jump it here? So, and there was no real sign over whether or not there you could do this, and there were only certain buildings you could go in, and there were certain things, and so that kind of inconsistency ran throughout... Throughout most of the game, like when you were in the city, when you were in when you got through the city to get to the section you were going to for the gameplay to continue, it wasn't as much there. But usually, just when you were going through the main city, which is where your hub is, that's where your house is, you keep all your stuff there. That's where I found the inconsistencies existed the most. But coming along with falling off, the jumping from one to the other, there was weird, illogical points to it where there was times I would fall or jump off of something. I'd be like, oh, I can jump off of that. And I would die, where I'm like, that's probably not that high. Like, I don't think I would die. And in real life, I would probably just, like, injure my ankle or something.
You're just unable to walk for the rest of your life, but you survive.
Yeah. But I'm like, you know, I'm a thief. I'm wily. Sometimes I make these great jumps down off of ledges. And then sometimes I was like, I'm at a second floor window, and I'm probably sure I could jump down without too much injury. So that kind of inconsistency where I was like, how did I die? What's going on? But I had to say, I wish that the upgrades were a little easier to find. Like, in order to upgrade, you have to kind of look around. You have to collect things to get your upgrade. And I found, I just sometimes couldn't find them. So I found, like, by like level chapter 3, there were already aspects of the world that I was in that I couldn't get to because I hadn't upgraded one or two skills because I'd missed out in like chapter 2 of that upgrade. And I thought, you know, if I'm going to be able to play this game consistently, I'd like to be able to have this kind of ability. And I guess it's just because, you know, obviously I picked up this game on Tuesday. We're recording this on Friday. I didn't have like the 30 hours of free time to roam around and really, I was really straight and focused and try to like get through this game. But I did find a little taxing where I was like, man, I wish I had that skill. I wish I could upgrade that. Which also brings me to the mapping issues that I had, and that the maps kind of suck. They don't really tell you anything. They're the most generic of generic maps. It's basically like, here's your dot, which became frustrating when I was trying to find vendors to buy stuff off of. If I would run out of darts, if I had run out of, you get poppies to use this kind of seeing light, like glowing, you can... It's kind of like in Assassin's Creed, again, when you can look around and see what you're supposed to go to next. Well, you use poppies and there's a weird opium thing that underlines in this game.
Well, it might be England in the 1800s.
Well, yeah, so. Yeah, of course, you know, and you're in the seedy underbelly, and seedy underbelly, I thought that place closed. So you collect poppies and whatnot, but sometimes you had to buy them off, like, the seedier vendors, and I couldn't, there were sometimes I got totally lost, and I couldn't find them. I was like, why is there not a place on the map?
Hold on for a second. Now, I really do not want to invoke this, because Momin will give me heck for the next 5 minutes that we're on the air. Whatever.
I'm prepared.
Time
Let's go.
On the air. This sounds like my Mass Effect review.
Yeah.
Where you just said that you love this game. And up until this point, you've given us nothing but, well, there's this inconsistency with this part of the game.
Yeah.
And inconsistency with this part of the game. The map kind of sucks. What do you enjoy about this game so much?
What I've loved about it is that there is a great transition between... It's a Square Enix game, so it's in many ways, it's got the... Yeah, action stealth, but there's also a lot of puzzles, and I love puzzles. And some of these were like rip your hair out kind of frustrating puzzles, but I love it. And I thought this smooth transition between gameplay going into puzzles, it was logical, it was interesting, and I really liked it. I loved the characters, I liked the story, the dialogue seemed really rich. Like I said, the game itself is beautiful to look at when you can finally see it. I really enjoyed the story. Like I said, it went in different ways, weird ways that I thought that I never would have expected it to go. But I really definitely enjoyed it. I liked the spookiness of it. Like the characters, the story, the adventure of it, and when the controls worked well. It worked well. Like, it was fun to smool around the little city streets, and you could never really tell who was supposed to see you and who weren't. Obviously, like, the homeless people were fine if they could see you, but, you know, sometimes I'd be like, oh, there's a room, and I think I can walk by that guy. He's not going to narc on me. And then somebody would, and I'd be like, oh. But it was really more of a realistic challenge where I was like, if I was a thief in this
world. When somebody narcs on you, do you just run, or what happens?
You have any different options. Like most games now, you can play it three different ways. You can play it as a stealth kind of ghost. I always played it as the predator because I would go and just if anybody would see me, I'd take them down. But you can be an opportunist as well where you can like throw things to distract them and run away. But if somebody sees you, yeah, you can take them down. You can run really fast and try and hide in a different location. And you have lots of options of different ways of gameplay.
I hear, though, that the taking down option is never really the best one because fighting in this game is not really... a choice you should ever be making as far as the game design goes.
No, yeah, and fighting skills are absolutely terrible in this game as well. Like, you really don't have a lot of ability to fight. You can club people, you can shoot an arrow at them, but it's really never. The game has kind of set up in the way that fighting should be your last option, and it's very easy at times if you get surrounded by guards to just kind of die very quickly, because they will come at you with all kinds of things and you have this one little axe thing.
Yep. Give a score.
I'm going to give it an 8. I really liked it. There were obviously some gameplay faults to it, but overall enjoyment, I liked it.
8 out of 10 for Thief. Brian, that leaves you about a minute and a half, 2 minutes for Plants vs. Zombies.
Oh, what the heck will I do with the extra minutes?
Okay, we'll just use the 60 seconds.
Would anyone like to play Battlefield again? Because that's what Plants vs. Zombies Gun Warfare is. It's strange that they've tried to latch onto Modern Warfare, the Activision shooter, so much with the name, with promotional advertisement. You know, you watch trailers and they're all military shooters. And it's been a weird choice, because the game is pretty much Battlefield, except for it's not first person in Garden Warfare. It's third person. Mm-hmm. And different skins. There's no real humans running around. There's plants and there's zombies. But other than that, you still have the same sort of gameplay that you'd find in a Battlefield game. So that's kind of it. It's not your very first baby's first shooter. It's kind of a watered-down version of a Battlefield game, mm-hmm, with all these plants and zombies fighting each other. And for the most part, it's very balanced. I do feel that the zombies are a little better at attacking, and the plants are kind of set up to be defensive. I guess that makes sense, because in the original game, that's what they were. The plants were the defensive, the zombies were the offensive. Mm-hmm. But that kind of makes it feel weird, where there's some times where it's just going to be a straight-up team deathmatch.
Right.
So it's not a bad game overall. I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. It's, as I said, it's not baby's first shooter. It is a watered-down version of Battlefield. And if that appeals to you, there you go.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this week. So for Brian Calhoun and Christine Chubb, I'm Omen Qureshi. This has been Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network.